Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya. Oh, Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya.
That's the music we're listening to of Jai Utal. He's one of the best kirtan, which is a music form based on Hindu mantras. It's a very transcendent spiritual way of going into sacred space. Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld. This program is produced by Portal to Ascension. PortalToAscension.com, and there's an amazing upcoming conference that Portal Ascension is doing in Irvine, California, October 3rd and 4th. Go to AscensionConference.com. Tonight's program is an interview with Jai Utal, one of the best kirtan musicians that we have. He has an upcoming concert in New York City, but he goes deep into his life and what is the source of his inspiration. We'll be back, right back with Jai. Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of our consciousness, our spiritual awakening, our transformation as a planetary race of beings. And that is one of the reasons I'm talking to tonight's guest, Jai Utal. He'll be coming to New York on June 16th at the Church of St. Paul and St. Andrews. That's West 86th and West End Avenue. Welcome, Jai, to the program.
Thank you, Alan. Good to be here.
I have to say about you, you are probably one of the leading kirtan musicians in the West. You've been doing it for 50 years, and I think there's only a few people at really the level that you're doing it so devoted. How did you get into the whole thing?
Well, you know, I've been a musician since I was a little boy, but kirtan, I think I first heard it when I was like 15 or so, something like that, in New York City. I actually saw some of the first year of when the Hare Krishnas were around. I followed them around. I just loved what I was hearing. And then I used to go to these old record stores and find anything I could find from India. Every kind of music from India really touched me. The classical music really touched me. And I went on to study with Ali Akbar Khan on and off for 40 years. And at the same time, the devotional music and the mantra chanting, you know, really just kind of like blew my mind. And I began to pursue that alongside the classical studies.
Were you from New York? Were you born here in New York?
Yeah, I was born and raised in, well, I was born in Brooklyn. First couple of years Long Island. And then till I was 18, we lived in Manhattan.
Well, that's sort of like me. I mean, I was brought up on Long Island. I mean, where do you get to even be exposed to that kind of devotional music? I was never heard any Indian chants growing up on Long Island. I mean, how did you even find it?
Well, I guess, you know, in all honesty, I just have to say it found me. I don't know. Where did I first find it? There was an album. I found an album called Street Singers of India. And this must have been when I was about 13 or, a little older, 14. And I just bought it. You know, vinyl, the way we used to listen to music. And I brought it home, and it was these devotional singers from Bengal in India. And I knew nothing about really any. The music made chills go up and down my whole body. And so then I went back to that same record store and looked through everything in the Indian section. And I found certainly a bunch of Ravi Shankar albums, but But what really, really, really turned my head around also was albums by Ali Akbar Khan. Then when I was 17 or 18, I went to college in Oregon and quickly dropped out. I failed music and I failed religion. This was at Reed College. And I came down to California and started studying music with Ali Akbar Khan. Are you familiar with him?
I've heard the name. Was that more Arabic music or?
No, it's North Indian classical music. And he was the elder guru brother to Ravi Shankar.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard his name. So you studied with him personally, huh?
Yeah, for many, many years. Became, you know, sort of part of his family. I began to teach guitar to his son. And he passed away, I guess it was 6 years ago, but I'm still very close to the family.
If you want to go a little deeper, I mean, I think the difference between kirtan and like regular music is not just the devotional part, but the transformational part of these kind of music. What happened to you is an awakening while you were studying the music.
What happened, the first time I actually saw, this is when I was, that very short period of time when I was in college, the music went inside of me and really, really deep place recognized it as being the closest sound vibration to the life force, to that which permeates the universe. Then at the same time, I guess when I was, you know, the same age, around 17 or 18, I got involved in yoga to learn some of the chants, the devotional kirtans that my yoga teacher from India was sharing with us. And at first, I just really loved the spirit and the energy of the communal mantra singing. But then when I went to India and met my guru, Neem Karoli Baba, somehow the chanting of these simple mantras that we chant in kirtan became the key, the absolute key to my soul's connection to spirit and to my soul's connection to my guru. That has only grown and grown and grown through all these years. You know, the thing about kirtans is it can be sung in many, many different styles. But I've always, you know, really drawn from the Indian classical tradition for my singing. Even when I'm singing a kirtan with a reggae band or with a rock format, somehow the ragas studied densely began to permeate the way I sing. And I don't know, you know, there's been dark times in my life, but I think that time and again, it saved me over and over and over and over again.
But tell me a little bit about Neem Karoli Baba. Were you there? I mean, because a lot of kirtan, I mean, very well-known kirtan singers came out of that ashram, out of his teaching, starting with Bhagavan Das, who brought Ram Das, and then there was Krishna Das. Were you all there at the same time?
Yeah, I was there at the same time as Krishna Das and Ram Das. I didn't meet Bhagavan Das till later, back in America. But yeah, and I was singing kirtan before I even went there. But somehow, at Maharaji's ashrams, Neem Karoli Baba, we call him Maharaji, there was kirtan being sung 24 hours a day. And you know, it was kind of in the background of everything that was happening, particularly the inner, I don't know, Maharaji reached inside of us and touched our souls and awakened just this longing, this bhakti, this feeling of wanting and to God. And so, you know, so kirtan was the backdrop behind all of that. And Maharaji very often would tell us meaning the Westerners, to go to a different part of the ashram. And I don't know if he was just trying to keep us out of trouble, keep us off the streets, or you know, really giving us this instruction that this is what we should do. So not everybody that was with Maharaji went on to become, you know, really into kirtan, but several people did.
Can you just talk about him a little more? Because I never got a chance to meet him. Yeah, of course, Ram Das has written about, lots of people have talked about him, but I'm just curious about your experience and how being in his presence transformed you somehow.
Yeah, certainly I have stories of things that happened. But for me, being with Maharaji is not in the past tense. So, like, I feel like he's with me every day, guiding me through the challenges of my life and protecting me and taking care of me. And this feeling when I was in India back then, but it came to me really profoundly in a dream. And then I went to see Maharaji the next day, and certain things that happened reinforced this unbreakable knowledge that he had been my protector and my guide and savior for lifetimes. It was very, very simple. Usually not like Maharaji, he never gave lectures or discourses. He gave some spiritual guidance, but through, you know, what you might say, saw into us. And he emanated such deep, deep knowing, seeing, and loving towards us. So, you know, we would just sit around. When he spoke with us, there would be a translator. And a lot of times it was, you know, very light conversation. But behind the conversation was this just awakening our hearts and you know, entering our hearts almost. But, you know, I was also 19 when I was there. I was very young. And I don't remember every day and every minute. I wish I did. But the profound thing is that the connection with him has never gone away, faded. And it's not like I'm a super disciplined yogi or anything like that. You know, I'm not. You know, I just feel his presence in my life, you know, all the time.
Do you think there's something about his love and his open heart and the power of that, that the kirtan singers that came out of his ashram were able to tap into that, and that's why the power of the love that he emanated helped all the kirtan singers that came out of there become so connected. That's why they're maybe some of the best. You and, you know, Krishnadas, Bhagavan Das, some of the leaders in the field came out because they're sourced by that love.
Yeah, I do feel that. But other people, doctors, lawyers, architects, or you know, or whatever, that love continues to manifest in them as well. So, you know, sometimes I think, like, how the heck did I become a professional kirtan singer? How is it possible that I make my living chanting God's name? And, you know, I always knew that I was a musician and that I wanted to be a spiritual musician. I mean, from when I was really a kid. But I actually wasn't really a singer. Like, I didn't really come out on singing until I was in my 40s, because I never thought of myself as a singer and was always so self-conscious and self-critical. But, you know, that hand on my back pushing me and pushing me and pushing me, I feel like I was forced to do this. And I feel very grateful about that.
Did he give you the name Jayutal Maharaji?
No, Utal is my family name.
Oh.
It's actually a shortening of a longer name. When I think three or four generations ago in India. Jai is an Indian name and it means victory. And I had that as a nickname before I ever went to India. And Maharaji asked me one day what my name was. And I told him, actually the full Indian name is Jai Gopal. And I said that and he just kind of nodded and never gave me a name.
And how long did you spend with him?
I tried my best to stay longer, but I couldn't get my visa renewed. Obviously, it was time for me to come home because Maharaji could have fixed my visa at the wink of an eye, you know. But I came home and it was very difficult to come back and, you know, be part, you know, re-enter this society. But it was a gradual process. And so it was 4 months.
Only 4 months. That's interesting.
There are people that met him for once for their entire life.
That's a real master, and you feel that presence to this day, you're saying?
Yes. I mean, it's not like, you know, my mind goes in a million directions, so it's not like if I was to say I feel his presence every minute of every day, I would be lying. But a day doesn't go by where at some point when I just get a little more quiet, I feel him profoundly. So I know that he's just around us.
Is it that connection that makes you really one of the best in the field, probably.
I can't say.
Just wondering what when you're singing, are you connected to him as well? Or what's happening for you when you're chanting?
Well, the heart of what's happening, you know, the bottom line of what's happening is I'm singing to him and, you know, trying through my singing to connect with him. And thus to connect through him to God, to the divine. My focus is it's not 100% focus, but that's the intention. And that's mostly why I'm doing it and what I'm feeling while I'm singing. Another thing that goes into just me as a singer and as a musician is all the years of musical study. I won't say that this makes me better than anybody, but any other kirtan musician, but it makes me a little different because I studied with Alepar Khan so long and then continue to study Brazilian music with a great, great, great Brazilian guitarist. You know, for me, just the exploration of music has always been equally important part of my spiritual journey. That is, I know, unique about me. But maybe it's bad. I don't know. But that's who I am.
I sing and chant at Bhakti Fest. I think I've seen you at the Omega Institute. There's a transcendence. I mean, I think all the really great ones, something else takes over. I mean, do you go into a trance? Do you go into an altered state when you're singing?
I wouldn't say that I go into a trance or go into an altered state. I feel grounded while I'm singing, and I like to feel grounded. I don't feel spaced out. I don't know how to say this, but you know, my inner world of emotions and feelings and expands. But I wouldn't say that I'm in a trance. I don't have those conceptions. For me, it's very grounded and very moment to moment to moment to moment singing and offering my heart and offering my voice and offering my music in as deep a way as I can. I know many people feel like blissed out and transcendent, and I just don't know about that. But I feel that that's awesome. You know, I mean, that's amazing. Yay. But I feel like I'm doing this like job, sort of speak. But I don't mean that in a negative sense. It's just like, this is my work. This is what has been given to me to put my heart and my soul into. Some days, you know, when I'm singing and playing, I feel so completely in the divine flow. And some days I don't. But it sort of doesn't matter, because this is what has been given to me to do, and this is what I'm doing. It's good to know your job on earth.
It is good to know why you're here. But does it, like, if you're not doing kirtan, traditional, mantra-type chants, and you're doing something maybe that you've written or somebody else's, maybe Brazilian music, is the feeling different, or is it always the same?
For me, the whole essence of is the, you know, the expression of longing for God and the expression of the heart's just offering oneself to God. You know, in India, in the bhakti tradition, the traditional tradition of devotional yoga that kirtan is a big part of, there's also a huge tradition of songs and poems written by these bhakti saints about their experiences, about how they're experiencing their life, one day in separation from their beloved, another day in union with their beloved. And these songs aren't kirtans, but they are devotional songs that have become part of the Indian tapestry of devotion. So when I'm singing songs that I've written that aren't necessarily kirtan songs, I feel connected to that tradition and to that aspect of the tradition. They're all spiritual songs. Always wind back onto to mantra. But I also love, you know, the expression of singing what's in my heart, singing it in English. And I guess I have to say that this, I'm really coming back to this in a way that I haven't for years and years and years of really, really, really enjoying and investing my heart into the songs that I've written in English, mixing them with the kirtan. And this is what I'll be doing on June 16th at the concert in Manhattan. Weaving a blanket that includes songs, that includes mantras, that includes stories about myself, but also stories about the gods and the goddesses. And, you know, storytelling has become a big part of my life and what I do, really ever since my son was born 13 years ago. Now at the kirtan camps that we lead, I tell the entire story of the Ramayana over 7 days. And, you know, so I try to bring that into the concerts as well, and that's also another very, very, very important part of the bhakti tradition, is telling the stories of the avatars and the incarnations and just telling and listening to these divine tales. So everything kind of sits together or touches the same essence in me.
What is it that you want the audience to get? I mean, is there, like, you want them to get a taste of God, or what's your deeper message.
I guess the word you used was apt. I want them and myself included, to have a taste of what I consider divine nectar. And when we have a taste of that, whether you've been doing it 50 years or just this is the first time in your life, that taste is what awakens the longing and the almost the desperation to feel more of that divine energy. My mission or what was the word that you used? My message, that's what you said. My message is to my own heart as much as it is to everyone's heart, just to like open to that spirit and that spark and that divine love that is ever present.
So what's a song that you've written recently that you might be playing on June 16th?
Oh, well, one that I love to sing nowadays is something that I wrote for my third album, which was in the early 90s. And it's called Conductor. You know, my first musical love was old-timey Appalachian music. And I played banjo. And banjo was really my first, like, thing that touched my heart so deeply. And so this song is in the style of a Appalachian mountain ballad. But it says, "Conductor, conductor, please don't treat me wrong. I've been waiting on this train for so long. I have my ticket in my hand and I'm ready for it to go to my home in the hills. Take me back."
Oh, conductor, conductor, please don't treat me wrong. I've been waiting on this train for so long. Got my ticket in my hand and I'm ready for it to go to my home in the hills. To my home in the hills. Why did I roam? To my home in the hills. Take me back. To my home in the hills. Why did I roam? To my home in the hills. Take me back. Though the people that I hurt, I know my time will come to me. To my home in the hills, why did I roam? To my home in the hills, take me back.
I really love to sing, and you know the metaphor.
So you why do you like this song?
Why do I like it?
What is it about this particular song?
Well, the metaphor of the train and the conductor. You know, I often feel like even while I'm singing Kirtan, I feel like I'm in this train, and the train is it's going for lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes. But please, please, please bring me to the destination. And one of my, you know, I spoke earlier, just I mentioned in passing that I had a dream of Maharaji, which was when I knew he was my guru, and really, you know, everything sort of came together in this dream. And it was also, the dream occurred in a train station. And so, you know, the train image, and I used to live in a house that was quite near the train tracks. And yeah, I don't know. So the train image became very, very powerful. And I love this kind of old timey, it's sort of like blues, but it's not blues. It's mountain music feels like from long ago.
So you do many different genres of music. It's not just the traditional Indian. Do you ever try to mix them together in a song, or you keep them separate?
No, I've been working on mixing them together since the very, very, very beginning of my recording career. My initial idea, I guess, the thing that got me going was, how can I mix Western harmony with Indian raga? And then on and off, saying, well, how can I mix English words with a Sanskrit mantra? That's been at the heart of what I've been doing for the last, and my first album came out in, I don't know, 1988 or something like that. And even before the album came out, that's what I had been working on.
Right.
I spent some time in 1973, I think, in West Bengal with a group of itinerant devotional singers, ecstatic singers called the Bowels of Bengal, studied their music and just lived with them and traveled on the trains with them. Again, we sang on trains, you know. And so like years before I ever put out my first album, I was experimenting with writing bowel songs, but writing them in English.
I was just thinking of, there's all those Woody Guthrie songs about trains as well, right? All the Woody Guthrie type.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely, you can't say it's an archetypal image, because in ancient times there weren't trains, but it is sort of an archetypal image.
Right. So you were saying something else, though, about traveling with those people, kind of developing.
Yeah. So I was working, when I came back from India for that particular trip, and I was, I don't know, 22 maybe? Yeah, 21. I was exploring writing English words that were like from the tradition of the Bowels of Bengal, but in English, but with Indian melodies and Indian accompaniment. And then working on taking the bowel songs and putting them in Western musical accompaniment. So yeah, the mixing, anyone who's, you know, followed what I do over the years, it's always been a big part. This just last couple of weeks ago at Shakti Fest, it was a full set of kirtan, but the music was 90% reggae. And I had a big band, I had like two trap drummers, percussionist, keys, electric guitar, bass, singers, and myself playing guitar and singing, and a little bit of harmonium. You know, that musical exploration for me is just a big part of my life and a big part of my spiritual life and journey. And it's what I do, what I love to do. At my solo concert, one of the challenges is to try to bring all these colors together, musical colors together, but just with no other musicians, just with me playing guitar and banjo, and trying to make it, well, first of all, to make it simple enough that I can actually pull it off. But second of all, to make it musically diverse and pull from many, many different streams and just express it, minimalistically, just by myself. And it's a real challenge. And it's also a challenge, emotionally, to be up there on stage completely by myself. You know, really naked, really vulnerable, and I haven't done it before in my career. I just started. The first time was about 6 months ago.
And how did that feel?
Scary and awesome, both. It's different being so naked on stage and so vulnerable and being the total focus. But there's also, you know, a way that I can open up and share very, very intimately, which I'm not able to do when there's a lot of musicians. I mean, I sort of am, but not in the same way. So it's very intimate. It's very wide open. and it's very scary all at the same time.
I've been writing about creativity, and I somehow I feel you're touching upon this convergence of God and the creative spark and this merging into the singular personality, which expands into the collective, because you transcend yourself when you're in that creative flow, and somehow it is connected to a God awakened state.
Yeah, totally.
So what's your process when you're writing and connecting?
Well, writing, it's always different. Sometimes it can be just the simplest thing. I'm driving in my car and a melody pops in to my head. So I sing it. Or if I, like maybe I'm practicing one of my instruments and just a melody comes and then turn it into a mantra, joins the melody, and then I find chords for it. And it can, in a way, it's mundane, and yet in another way, it's so deeply happening inside of myself, deep inside of myself. Performing and singing these things, that's another story. That is really, those are moments of just offering myself, offering my being, offering my mind, offering my ego, offering my skill, offering my lack of skill, just offering my whole being into the song and praying that my guru comes and sings through me. And that's when you get more into the like wide open consciousness.
Is it different though when you're singing a traditional kirtan, ancient song with mantras, and when you're singing one of your new songs? Is there a difference in you with that, or is it the same?
It's really the same. It's so the same that it's crazy. because I'm just singing from my soul. There's something when you're doing a full evening of kirtan or afternoon of kirtan, very soon everybody becomes the band, really. So the focus and the carrying of the practice, it becomes shared by everyone in the room. Spiritually and energetically, I feel the same thing is true when I'm singing my solo songs. But yet, it's a little different because people aren't necessarily singing along with me. I feel a little bit even more exposed. But I just I work through that and work through the self-consciousness. And when I come out the other side, then it's just the same. Each song is written to connect with God, just like the mantras are sung to connect with God. I kind of, intersperse in these concerts. There'll be a song and then a kirtan and then a song and then a kirtan, or a kirtan will be part of a song. So it's never very far away.
Is this, would you say, your spiritual practice, this kind of seva? Is this how you do it, or is it something, is it more than that, your spiritual practice?
It's completely my spiritual practice. Nothing could be more than that. Between music and singing and taking care of my family and being a father and a husband, that's the entire focus of my life, and that's my entire spiritual practice. That's what I live for, and I don't consider the music and the singing more important than taking care of my son. It's all one package.
So taking care of your son is a sort of seva as well, but is that more individually based, ego based, or is it the same for you? Maybe it is.
I think it's all the same. The mood is a little different, playing with a kid, the mood is different than, singing with an audience, but the essential, intentional place that I'm coming from is the same, to be as deeply from my heart as I can be.
On this coming, I guess next week, on June 16th, you're going to be singing the traditional kirtan and then mixing it up with your own work, right?
Well, I have to, take a little look at the word traditional, because the mantras that I sing are indeed traditional mantras. I never would ever think of making up a mantra. They're ancient, ancient mantras. From the very beginning, I've been composing melodies and you know, making the music my own, even with all the study of Indian classical music. But yeah, okay, so if that's what you mean, yes, that it will all be interspersed. And there will be times when I will hope that the whole audience will sing with me, and times when that won't be happening.
Oh, but you were saying just there, the mantras are traditional, but you are creating new melodies for those mantras. That's what you've been doing, right?
Yes, and from the very beginning.
How do those traditional Indians feel about you creating new melodies? Or is it part of, like, adding to their culture? Is there a reaction from them, or do they not care?
Well, them is a huge generalization. Mostly, I've always gotten so much loving support from the Indian community. And part of that was because of my connection to Ali Akbar Khan, and certainly my connection to Maharaji. But, you know, I've sat in temples in India with kirtan singers. And, you know, I'm just like a participant, not a leader. And I see them making new melodies every 10 minutes, bringing the chant into a different musical spectrum, a different raga, a different tempo. And that is part of the expression, the unique individual expression that is hand in hand with the mantra, transcendent mantra. You know, the aesthetics of bhakti. Well, many, you know, people have different opinions, but for my opinion and my studies and my, you know, what I've always resonated with, the aesthetics of what we're doing is supremely important. But it's not aesthetics of, like, you know, getting a good review in the newspaper or anything like that. It's the heart making the most beautiful offering it possibly can for the beloved. And what that beauty means is different and unique for everyone. But refining and always, like, trying to, you know, if you're making to your beloved in conversation year after year after year, and you always express yourself with the exact same words and the exact same tonality, conversation with your beloved is not going to have much juice in it. So the creation of the melodies and the musical forms is so much part of the Indian devotional tradition. It just is. And even all my studies with Ali Akbar Khan, you know, his emphasis was learn these traditional ragas, you know, learn them deeply and learn them with all their unique phrases and tones. But then create your own song and create your improvise, knowing the tradition, then improvise. I mean, other kirtan singers don't do that necessarily. And it's certainly not required in kirtan to make up your own melodies. But it's not frowned on.
Right. I didn't know. But is there a difference from concert to concert or performance to performance based on the audience? And or are you always in the same sort of state, or do you get something from the audience? I'm just curious about that.
Of course I get something from the audience. Well, at a kirtan, when an audience is really singing, oh, I mean, it's just so blissful to be sharing that practice with whether 100 or 1,000 people, or if it's a more quiet situation and I'm singing, just singing my songs or singing my ragas, and I feel the audience drinking it in, you know, it elevates me. We're all elevating each other and uplifting each other. I think that's the difference between devotional music and a regular concert performance. But to tell you the truth, Alan, I think any soulful musician, while they're performing, is in dialogue with the entire audience. It becomes a unified field of raised vibration.
After you finish performing, do you take that state with you? Does it take you time to come down? How do you make the transition? Or is your goal stay in that state? Yeah.
Well, as I said before, you know, I feel grounded when I'm singing. I don't feel different. I don't necessarily feel like I'm high or low, or I mean, I'm just like on to the next. It's like, I'm done now. I have to pack up and I'll go home. I'm kind of hungry. Let's see, what can I eat that's very light before bed? And hopefully my wife will be awake and we can chat a little bit. And hopefully my son won't be awake because he's a kid. He should be asleep. So no, the transition I never, that's never like a challenge or a weird thing or anything. Sometimes at the end of a performance, I have to rush, and then it's a kind of a bummer, you know, like if there's someone else coming back on stage, then I feel a very uncomfortable if I have to rush after that. But if I can just move gently from the concert into whatever the next thing is, no, it's just fine. It's just awesome. You know, I feel good.
Yeah, no, I get that. Do you listen to other Kirtan singers? I mean, sometimes do you play with Krishnadas? I mean, I'm just curious. Or others? Who, how does that work?
I listen to some. And I guess my preference is listening to the Kirtan singers from India, just for no reason except that that touches me a little bit more. But I support, you know, with my heart and soul and words, everybody doing this practice. I want everyone to experience deeper and richer, you know, connections with God and through song. You know, we're all in this together. That's for sure.
No, I love Deva Pamal. I mean, that just puts me out there. I mean, lots of people. You.
Yeah, Dave is awesome. I sang it at her... not this year, but last year when she was in California, she and Matan and Manoj giving a concert, they invited me on stage to sing with them. It was just really beautiful. It was such a beautiful moment. Yeah, I love them. They live in like a heavenly sphere.
And I love Bhagavan Das. I mean, Bhagavan Das was my first introduction to this whole Hindu, Indian chanting tradition. And that just, and I just said, wow, what's going on with that guy? So he's one of the first for a lot of people, I guess, right?
Yeah, we used to play together all the time. We did so many concerts together. But I'm kind of out of touch with him and haven't seen him in quite a while.
Yeah, I was wondering where he is. I think he back in California or something? He may have been.
I know from a... He just gave a concert in Portland, but I think he lives somewhere up in the Northwest, but I'm really not sure.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Just keep in touch with that community. I guess people can go to Bhakti Fest and see everybody, which is really a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. But Bhagavan Das has never been to Bhakti Fest, and he should be.
Well, Sridhar knows him, so maybe you'll invite him. So you're doing this concert in New York on June 16th, and what else is coming up for you in the next couple of months?
Well, I'm working on this project, actually, with my wife, Nubia, and we're taking, you know how before I was talking about the tradition of the devotional songs as opposed to the kirtan? So we're going through books with translations of bhakti poetry and bhakti songs from different, and we're finding them, and we're kind of rephrasing them and reframing them, and I'm writing new music for them. So I think, you know, we're going to call it Songs of the Mystics, I think. I'm not 100% sure. And I haven't started actually recording, but I've been recording it in GarageBand, and very excited about that. The next big event, I guess, after this... June 16th is our, you know, I have a lot of smaller gigs, but our Kirtan camp in August, which will be our 16th annual Kirtan camp, you know, that's a big thing for me. And I, you know, it's always so great. We really love it. That happens in the Bay Area, that we do it in Fairfax, just outside of San Francisco. And we spend a week together singing and telling stories and also sharing techniques on like harmonium and drums and just diving into the ocean together, the bhakti ocean. And my wife teaches yoga and all kinds of stuff during that week as well. So that's coming up, and that's always really great. But I'm quite excited and nervous, I should say. And, you know, a lot of my energy is going towards this June 16th. And really hoping that people come and people enjoy a much more introspective and quiet presentation of the heart. You know, because often my kirtans are very wild and they get very, you know, people are dancing like crazy. And this is not like that. This is much more of a quiet, introspective journey with me.
And why have you decided to do that? Why are you doing this different than others?
Well, I've been having, you know, a couple of years, just a longing for something very soft and intimate. Because it's like when I sing at home, I sing gently and I sing quietly. My musical, and you know, my what I do in public, you know, often builds up to a very climactic energy. So I just spend longing for the softer colors, the quieter. When I say softer, I don't mean less powerful or anything like that, but just, you know, the quieter, deeper moments. And I created a concert, or I'm in the process of creating this concert that I hope I'll do a lot of places, that really is all about those deep, introspective moments.
I see. So it's just kind of a different, like you sort of done the other thing in a way. You've gotten people really excited, really. And now this is sort of something new for you, you're saying.
Yes, it's totally new for me. And I will continue doing the other, of course. And God knows what else will come to me in my life, you know, as far as what I want to do with music and with devotion. But this for me is really new. It's new in terms of doing it publicly. It's not new in terms of me sitting in my couch at home singing. But publicly, it's really new for me. And that's kind of why it's a little bit nerve-wracking and also challenging in a beautiful way.
And does this take you to a different place in a way? So you will have a different experience?
I do have a different experience. I mean, it's a different, I should say more like it's a different color of the rainbow spectrum of devotion. Where I'm coming from and the intention with which I'm singing is the same. It's exactly the same as if I'm singing an ecstatic, fast, loud kirtan with 1,000 people. But the mood is just a little different. It's that introspective, deep, deep longing, you know, like in the early dawn kind of mood. But the intention is the same, you know, the offering myself and wanting to connect to my guru and connect to God. It's just the same. And to share that with others.
No, I get that. That's the place you're coming from. That's why your music is so pure. It is a form of service, and this is just another way to serve.
Yeah, exactly.
But even beyond this, you see other things possible and different collaborations. And have you ever collaborated with any rap artists?
Well, I've collaborated with MC Yogi. Do you know him?
Yeah, I've seen him at Bhakti. I don't know his music, but yeah. Is he a rap Bhakti guy?
Yeah, rap and hip hop, and it's, you know, but all spiritually oriented. And he actually was a student. He came to one of our kirtan camps, and I really encouraged him to go forward with what his dream was to do spiritually. And, you know, I sang on his first album, and but I don't imagine that I would do a lot of collaboration with rap artists, even though, you know, I like it. Right now, what's musically really inspiring me is Brazilian music, and what I'm doing in many of the songs I've written, kirtans, I should say, it's Brazilian melody and harmony, but with mantra. So, you know, I have a short-term goal. I don't know if I'll ever, but to be able to play a samba on the guitar and sing an Indian raga while playing it. You know, part of this is because my wife is Brazilian, and she's turned me on to the vast beauty of Brazilian music. So, you know, that's part of where that came from. Hey, Alan, I am looking at the time, and I have a sick son downstairs who I need to get him ready for bed.
Well, thank you for spending some time. It was my honor I feel honored to have talked to you about your deep career. So June 16th, 2018, New York City, St. Paul and St. Andrew's Church on West 86th and West End. How can people buy tickets?
Well, they can either go to my website, which is jayutol.com, or go to brightstarliveevents.com. I think it's .com. Actually, I'm not sure. Just Google Bright Star live events, and they're the ones who are producing it. Also, tickets can be gotten, I think, through Integral Yoga New York.
And probably at
IYI.
The, and the door, because it's a big place. I think they could see 1,200 people there at the balcony.
Yeah, so there'll be tickets at the door, too.
Well, thank you, Jai. It's really been great to get to know you.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Maybe I'll be there on the 16th. If not, I'll talk to you, and I'll tell Susan to send me some music.
Okay, yeah. Ask her to send you everything she's got. And I'll send you that live thing of the conductor. And then we're all good.
Okay, and your website again is what?
JaiUtall.com.
Okay, thank you, Jai. Have a good night. I hope your son feels better, and I'll talk to you. Okay.
Okay, thanks, Alan.
Sure. Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Thanks for listening to New Realities podcast on BBS Radio. Tonight's guest was Jai Uttal, JaiUtall.com. If you want to reach me, Alan Steinfeld, go to newrealities.com or newrealitiesevents.com. Look for the upcoming Portal to Ascension Conference in Irvine, California. Go to ascensionconference.com. And you'll see all the amazing guests like Robert Schock will be there, Grant Cameron, a lot of the UFO people, a lot of the Ascension people. I'll be there. Look forward to seeing you all there. And stay tuned next week for another program. Good night.
Behind the blue one, it was my soul, and the red one was my mind. And I'm down on my knees, crying for freedom. I'm down on my knees, begging for freedom, begging for freedom. Oh, Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya. Namah Shivaya, oh, Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya, oh, Namah Shivaya. Heaven's looking on. And I'm down on my knees, crying for freedom. I'm down on my knees, Shivaya. Oh, Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya. Oh, Namah, 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 Namah Shivaya. Oh, Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya. Oh, Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya.
Sada, Hara Hara Gori, Sambasada, Sambasada.